I don't know. Do you want to hear another story, tale or something? Well,
I want a cup of ginseng tea.
Lorraine, where'd she go?
No, not now.
Well, they won't drink it unless you put a little sugar in it.
No, I want it straight up.
Huh?
That's why I drink her.
That's the way she does.
Yeah, I'm talking.
Well, you won't drink very much of it that way.
What
will it
do to us?
It'll be good for you. It won't hurt you in any manner, whatever. It won't affect you.
Gives you energy.
Hmm?
Gives you energy, didn't
it? Yeah, supposed to, yeah. Supposed to be a... Right. The Chinese say it's a cure-all.
Yeah.
It's good for any ailment. And it sure doesn't hurt you any. I tell you, I was going to tell you a while ago, too, if I'm out in the woods, you pack my lunch. And dinner time comes, if I found a few sang, the bleached part of the top, it's like celery. As long as it's not exposed to the sun, well, that stem is white. Of course, if it gets exposed to sun, then it turns green. It's green from there on. But the white part, I usually just break off maybe an inch or so of it and chew it. Keep my mouth. As long as I've got that in, I never get hungry. Never get hungry. Sometimes come home and never have touched my lunch because I found enough sang to keep me.
Ladies who want to lose weight.
Sure. I've got a little bit of dry back in there. Do you ever see any of it dry?
No.
Huh? I've got a little back in there. I'll have her to bring it.
Are there any other sort of herbal remedies that are used around these parts?
Oh, yeah. Yes, they use a lot of them. Use peppermint. Spearmint, lots of it, and peppermint are growing right there at the end of the house. Use bone set. Now that's the one that'll knock the cold, but it's about like ginseng. It's not very palatable. It doesn't taste very good, but it'll really do it. My mother used to fix about a half a teacup full. If you have a bad cold, about a half a teacup full of bone set tea, and what? Bone set, B-O-N-E-S-E-T. It's a herb that grows about that tall and has a big bunch of white flowers on top of it. I say some out there in that swamp are growing. But now, in about 5 minutes after she put you to bed, the sweats would begin. And you sweat the next morning, you get awake and you're cold. That's the truth.
They call it bone sweat tea.
Yeah, that's called bone sweat. What
did you use the peppermint or the spearmint for?
Well, it's good for stomach ache, or it's all right, good for heartburn if you have heartburn that bad. Yeah. Well, let's see, I forgot where it was now. I told you I'd put my glasses on before I could talk. Yeah, I said I was going to tell you one that was true. Used to be my brother and I, used to be our job to keep the wood for the fireplace and for the cooking stove, all except the back log, as they called it, in the fireplace. And it could be any size, that big around, but we couldn't handle it. But it took about two men to get one of them in. They wouldn't come through the door. You had to turn them endwise and put them through and then roll them on. Then the other was you had to have a four stick that laid up on the fire dog, four sticks about that. Then you could use anything in between them. But it was our job to get the wood enough to do from one Saturday to the next. One Saturday we went over against the hill and took a saw and the axe and we cut down a beech tree. And as soon as the tree hit the ground, I grabbed the axe and started cutting the limbs off, down so we could cut it up. And we'd ball hoot it down the hill, just give it a start, and then it'd run itself down to the creek, and we had an old bay horse. We'd go get that horse, and he'd pull him over at the wood yard, and then we'd saw him up. But down next to the top was a little hickory, about an inch or inch and a half through. When the tree fell, it bent that over, and the top of it was laying under the tree. And I hit that thing a lick with the axe to cut it off, and I cut it off. But just as soon as I hit it, it flew back up and took me right across them, right across my eye, and it skinned my eye, never injured my eye. Skinned it up here and skinned it down there. Well, of course, that hurt. I went back up the butt of the log, the bottom end of it, we always call it the butt of the log, and was sitting there waiting for that thing to quit hurting, and my brother walked down to it, and he took hold of it, and bent her over, you know, like that, and bent her clear down to the ground. He said, "Boy, that would make a fine rabbit snare, wouldn't it?" And about that time, it slipped out of his hand, and it hit him right square across the right eye, too, the same eye, and it skinned his eye above and below there. Then when we got down home, we had to do a whole lot of persuading because Dad thought we'd been over in the hill fighting. Both went home skinned eyes, yeah. He was sure we had been into a fight. He whooped us for fighting. But he didn't. He didn't do it. If we had been a fighting for real, he knew it, he'd whoop us.
What would you put on your skinned eye? Would you put any ointment on?
Well, sometimes. Sometimes we would. If we had a cut, my dad chewed plug tobacco. And if we'd have a cut, he'd cut a little piece of that tobacco off, a little chunk of it, and put it right on that cut and have Mom to tie it up. And that was the end of it. I had a fish hook in this finger. My first cousin had given me a bass hook, and it was a long shanked one. And we had it tied on a piece of red yarn string. And I had the hook in my hand, and I was a runner, and my sister Rose was chasing. We were just playing, chasing after me, you know. And she happened to step on the end of that yarn string back there, and that jerked that hook in my finger right there, and the point of it stuck out right there, but it didn't stick out far enough for Dad to be able to get to that beard on it, we call it that, the thing that keeps him from coming back. He couldn't get to it, so he just sweated up his pocket knife and took it big enough up here where the eye of the hook was and cut her out through there to the point so he'd get the hook out, got a piece of tobacco, laid it out along on there and wrapped her up. And at the end of it, I still got the scar, but it never got sore, never hurt.
Did you cry?
Oh, yes, of course I cried. You do that whenever anything hurts you, you know. Always.
Did you ever, your family use golden seal for any kind of remedy?
Yes. It's a growing right there by the porch, too.
Did you
see
it regularly? No, I don't know what it looks like. I'd like to see it.
Yeah, it's a beautiful plant.
Do you use it for
sore mouth or sore throat, either one.
And if you have used it for that?
Yes, and I'm sure she's got some of it dried there somewhere. Yeah. It's a beautiful plant. But these out here now they've already bloomed and they're getting the seed pod on them, and they're a real deep maroon color. They're pretty. But the ginseng, when it's some seeds coming on it, but they're scarlet red when they get ripe. And that's the time to dig it, and that's the only time that it should ever be dug. These fellas are digging it now, although it's against the law. Where that grew, there'll never be any more. And if you wait till that seed gets red, and you can dig the root and then make a little furrow and plant that seed, and a few years from now there'll be some there for someone else. but they don't do that. Lots of them got so they're taking the little three leaf ones. When it first comes up, it's got three leaf. Next year, it's got five leaf. Next year, it's two prong. And not always, but usually the next year, it's a three prong. But it might stay a three prong for 10 years. And some of them turn to four prongs. They're the biggest and nicest. I've got a picture. I've got one in there, a five prong. The only one I ever seen in all of my life. It's a five prong. I'll have Lorraine to get that and show it to you. I got a frame for it, but it's not done yet. I got to cut the bottom part of it off because it's framed a little too big for it. But it's the only one I ever seen in my life anywhere. One with five prongs. And I don't know. I've got a picture of the root someplace in some of those pictures. But
what would a root off a five prong weigh?
Well, now that's another thing that's peculiar and odd. That depends altogether on the soil that it grows in. And you know, there's several people now that's because it's so high, they're trying to raise it, trying to farm it, you know. And a fellow that's used to buying it can tell by looking at the root whether it was dug in the wild or whether it was homegrown root. Because if you try to grow them like you would out here in the garden, and they wouldn't live in that much sun, they got to have some shade and some sun. But if you grow it there, it would grow straight down like a carrot or a parsnip or something like that. But out in the wild, it has to grow over gravels and roots and stuff like that, and that makes it irregular in shape.
Do they prefer it? It, will they even buy them if you've grown them in your...
Yeah, but they're not worth near as much. No, there's difference in the value of them. And there's difference in the medical qualities, too. But it's... I have many a time. When I first went to the river there to live, my wife and kids was in the bed before they ever got up. I'd gather up my fishing pole and go over there and go up Black Fork. Come back in about an hour with six or eight or ten nice rainbow trout or brook trout lots of times in the smaller streams. I'd leave there some mornings and come back in the evening and have more than a pound of green sang done day in and day out. But you can't do it now. You can't do it now. And I have always, all of my life, planted the seed back. Because I knew what it does if you destroy that.
Have you remembered where some of your plants
were? Yes, ma'am. Yes, sometimes. And sometimes somebody else found it, too. Yeah.
But you have on occasion found the one.
Yes, I have. Yes, I have. Yeah.
What kinds of beliefs did the old people in your family have? Did they plant by the signs? Did they believe in the places of the moon, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
What's that all about?
Yeah. Well, I can tell you something to prove that right quick by yourself. If you want to do it, just take your board. Six or eight. The wider the better, but you wouldn't want to take a real good one. And just go out there, see what the sign is according to the almanac. Take it out there and just lay it down. Just throw it down there on the ground. And I'll guarantee you that if the moon was pointing up when you put that board there, that the ends of it will just cup up like a canoe. They'll just, each end will lift right up off of the ground. And if the moon was pointing down when you threw that, that board will just eventually grow over with grass. If you leave it lay, it won't turn up. It'll be in the ground next year further than it was when you laid it down, and the next year it'll be further still. And pretty soon, I know I put shingles on the house, the first one that I built over there on the river. And if you put the shingles on, when the moon's pointing down, your shingles will lay perfectly flat. And they'll stay that way till they rot off. But if the moon is pointing up, I don't care if you put them on with 8-penny nails, which would be too big, you want about 6. But if you put them on with 8-penny nails, the ends of them will draw up and they'll pull the head to that nail right through that board and they'll still draw up. They point up. I guarantee you, I've seen it too many times.
That applies to planting technology.
Yeah. Or anything else. A pole bean will only go around the pole one direction. It won't grow around the pole clockwise. Yeah, lots of time. Yeah, sorry, I've got some out there that need starting now. I started a few of them last night, but weeds is about to take some of them. I can't do it fast enough. But you got to start them counterclockwise, and then they'll grow on up. You watch. Just plant your, get your pole bean and plant it sometime just for an experiment. And see if it don't, it'll always go counterclockwise. You'd have to tie it. If you put it around this way, you'd have to tie it fast to the pole to get it. Well, you would.
Well, what were some of the other old beliefs and superstitions that people had?
Oh.
No, we didn't.
We believed in ghosts, but we never believed in witches. They believed in ghosts, all right.
Did you tell
back
some
then.
Ghost tales back then?
Well, nothing special. Only there was one they used to tell. One of them chestnut trees that I was telling you about being so nice and big was a growing just outside the edge of a cemetery fence. And they was two boys come along there, and they were picking up chestnuts on the outside of the fence. And these other two guys had already gone inside and was picking up the chestnuts on the inside of the cemetery. And when they had all of them picked up off the ground, they sat down and they went to divide them. And the one guy said, "Now, you take this one and I'll take that one. You take this one and I'll take that one." And them boys outside heard him in there. And they thought it was the good Lord and the devil dividing up the dead people. So when they got them all divided out, why, they said, one of them said to the other one, he said, "Now there's two on the outside, we'll get next." And them boys thought they were talking about them. So they threw down their chests and just took off. So that's what, yeah, they believed them. And I myself have seen two or three things. I couldn't believe them, but I know that I seen them and heard them. I know that I was coming back from seeing my girl one time. I was big enough to go a-sparking, as they say it. And
Sally?
They was, how?
Friend Sally?
She said, was it, were you sparking Sally or somebody else?
No, that's another one. And anyway, there was a vacant school building that I had to pass in order to get back home. And they had told that some woman or girl had thrown a baby off of this swinging bridge into the river, and several people declared that they had seen something white come up onto that bridge and come halfway across and then vanish. And I was coming up next to about 1:30 or 2 o'clock maybe in the morning. I was coming up before I got that schoolhouse. It sounded to me just, I heard a baby a-crying. Now, that's all there was to it. Well, I immediately associated it with this tale about seeing them on the bridge. And it scared me, I guess, because it sounded to me like it was behind the schoolhouse. And when I got all my senses back, I was standing around there behind the schoolhouse looking for it. I didn't find it. Wasn't nothing back there. But that's where it sounded to me like. And I certainly heard it. I don't know what it was, but it sounded like a baby. So I had to put them to you. That's what made me so certain that that possibly was true.
What were the other things that you saw you couldn't explain?
Oh, let's see. Well, now one of them was we had two cows at home, and at this time, and we'd turn them loose to go up on the hill to pasture, and sometimes they'd go on down over on the what we call Law Run. And then we'd have to go around the hill, which is about a half, three quarters of a mile, to get them. And my cousin and one of my brothers and one sister, maybe both sisters, I'm not certain about, we went a-fishing. And we went down to a big hole, all three quarters of a mile below home. And it was late when we started back. And we had to come up the road on the opposite side of the river from where Laura Run was. And as we come up this road, we heard the cowbell. We had one of the cows bell so we could tell where they was at. We heard her across over there, so we knew that one of us would have to go get the cow. When we got up to this same bridge, the swinging bridge, and there was the fence that was built on the one side of the road, had a gate that you could go through it. And the man that owned the farm had a couple of plow points tied together on a wire to pull that gate shut to keep people from leaving it open. When we heard this cowbell, we come on up to this bridge and come across and come up into the other road, which was all first near across the road over there or something, from the one end of the bridge. And my brother, Bob, who was older than I was, he was a couple hundred yards down to Laura Run. He went down there to bring the old cows home. And it was almost dark, and while he was going for the cow, we heard something or somebody open that gate over there and heard it slam back shut because we heard the plow points dangling together. And we watched, and we heard footsteps. You had to come up steps to get up on the end of the swinging bridge. And something white, just about as high as the cables were along there, which was 3 or 4 feet, came to the center of that swinging bridge. And we kept waiting for it to come on around, come up the path to where we was. Never did. We never seen it after it come to the middle of that bridge. So that's a ghost. That I seen. I don't know what it was. Still don't.
Did you go get the cow?
Yeah, my brother had already gone when we seen this. We was waiting there for him to go down and come back because he had a couple hundred yards to go to get the cow. But there's a tale about the ghost, too, that this old guy would come up to by a church yard, and he seen the ghost, took after him, and he run off up the hill, through the field. Rail fence went crossways around the hill. He jumped up on that rail fence, you know, trying to run away from the ghost. And about that time, the ghost jumped right up on the rail, right beside of him. And the ghost said, "Pretty tight race." He said, "Yes, it's going to be damn sight tires from here on." No, what the hell he does. Give him extra steam. Scared him.
Name your brothers and sisters.
Well,
what was your mother's name?
My mother's name was Margaret Dell. Dad's name was Edward Jackson. Edward Jackson Moran. My mother was an Irons. And that's I-R-O-N-S. My oldest brother was Grover Alphys. My next brother was Robert William. My oldest sister was Lovey Esther. And my other sister was Rosie. About to forget that. I forget what that was. Then my brother next to me was Walter Creed, and my other sister was Lena Dell, and my baby brother, who was 7 years younger than any of the rest of us, was Edward J. A.Y., Edward J. Well, my grandfather, Irons, and grandmother Irons lived up on the hill just a mile from us. We used to go up there on Sundays afternoons or something instead of going to the races or somewhere. Well, we always went visiting, or some of them, some of the neighbors, not always some of grandma's, but some of the neighbors would go to visit us, you see. And that's what people did a lot for, you know, for entertainment and for get to pass the time. And they learned a lot of things too, exchanging their ideas and their views. An awful lot of things that happened today that never bothered us any. I never heard tell but one child ever being born out of wedlock till after I was 18 years old. I never heard tell but one. Now you ain't in style.
Were there local debating societies?
Yeah, at school, every Friday afternoon. Yeah, we have debating.
Was it just the school kids, or did the big folks get in?
No, it was mostly the upper grades in the school. I heard one girl say that we'd had a fire, a house burned out 2.5 miles below home, their little place called Porterwood. It had been a house burned down just a week or two before we had the debate, and it was which was the most destructive, fire or water. And she had fire. She had the affirmative side. For the fire was the most destructive, you know. In her debate, she said, now you just look, she said. If you'd have had all of the water in the whole creation, you couldn't have put that fire out down there. Now, why couldn't you put the fire out if you had all the water in the whole creation? You know you could have put it out. But that was her argument. You couldn't put it out if you had all the water in the whole creation.
Didn't impress you.
Huh?
That argument didn't impress you.
No, not a bit. Not a bit. Yes, we had that, and we had literary societies, and we had, of course, our regular spelling bees, or we had your cipher matches, as we called them, which was arithmetic, mathematics. Every Friday afternoon, we had something like that going on. And lots of times on Friday afternoons, we'd have take a field trip out, nature study, and was born and raised with it, and right beside of it, and in the middle of it. But you could always learn a little something from it. That never get done learning. Never don't make any difference how old you are. Well, you still got something to know. Nobody knows it all, I'll tell you that.
You know, it's gotten kind of cloudy this fall, and maybe it's not so hot. You reckon,
I wonder if we could open the door.
Or something and with you, and it'd be fun to walk in the woods and just talk about what you see or hear.
Well, I suppose, I don't know if it's not, if it isn't too hot. Trouble of it is, we've got trouble. They do this like they do everything else, you know. And you think I'm a regular crab, but it's the truth, and I can take you and show you. When they want to cut timber, they seldom ever do it right along the road where people can see it. They go off up in the head of the holler and cut it and take it out over that way, over in the other direction. I can show you where they haul it for 3 miles when it wasn't 75 yards to the road, to the main road. And if you don't want, if you don't believe it, you go over here to Stewart Park. Right there, you can see it just below Stewart Park. They've been a cutting in there, and they cut her clean, but they left a strip, just very narrow strip, so people can't see it, so it won't damage the scenery, so it won't, people just driving up and down there, and the leaves on, they don't know they cut that over there. But that's all you have to do, go there and look. And they follow that. How ginseng and ever holler from Parsons, clear up the Bickle Knob, and then sometimes above Bowden. And I've come around there, and all of them hollered but one when I come through there, and that's 2 or 3 years ago. They had went up on the Baker Mountain and then built roads down around through there and took that timber all out of the heads of them hollers where the good ginseng ought to be, where the soil was rich. But you can't tell it down there, where they didn't bring it out there. They brought it out up there at the tower and beyond the tower, and then brought it down this way. And they do it all that way. And that's not right. I can also take you places that it was logged out, timbered out, and all the good timber was cut, all the merciful timber was cut, and they skidded it out with horses, and you can't tell it today, because they didn't destroy all of the young timber in getting the other timber out, and they didn't punch roads. They took an axe and cut the burst so the horses could get up through there to the logs and then skidded them out. In a year or two, that's healed over. Now they punch roads out this way and go up a few feet and punch them out that way and go up a few feet and punch them out some other way. And that'll be 100 years before there's any timber grows where they punch that road out.
What did that mean for the flood last November?
That water went into the river whenever it got more than the soil could hold. Well, then it run off into the river because the trees takes up an awful lot of moisture. It takes a lot of moisture for a tree, especially a maple tree or trees with poplar with big leaves or something. And if it isn't there to take it up, why, it runs off into the stream. It has to do it.
So if the forest had been uncut or...
If it hadn't been cut, part of that water would never got to the river. Wouldn't. Well, I don't know. What time is it? We'll have to see. I don't care what